Thank you. Thank you both. Final case today is Chester versus Deep Roots Tattoo.
Wait, should I wait till they get seated or should I go ahead?
I think they're getting their water. And once they're hydrated, I think you're good to go.
Thank you. May it please the court. My name is George Arend, and I'm here today on behalf of Anna Chester. And I'd like to reserve 3 minutes of my time for rebuttal, if I may. We're seeking a reversal of a summary judgment order dismissing claims against a tattoo artist and a tattoo shop arising out of the administration of tattoo ink that was contaminated with bacteria and caused serious injury to Ms. Chester. And there's really two primary theories under which this case was pled and tried on summary judgment. The first was negligence per se, and the second was a freestanding negligence claim. And I'd like to start by addressing the negligence per se claim. Ms. Chester relies upon a Department of Health regulation, primarily relies on a Department of Health regulation that requires tattoo artists to use sterile instruments and aseptic techniques at all times during a procedure. And there's a couple things that I want to point out about this definition before I talk about the basis for liability under this statute and the responses.
The argument is that because she used arguably contaminated ink, that the procedure wasn't aseptic.
Yes, that's part of it. So it's both, it rendered the contaminated ink rendered the needle that was used not sterile. Once you take a sterile needle and dip it in a non-sterile substance, it ceases to be sterile, and of course, an aseptic technique as well.
If that was inconsistent with the statute, don't you think the legislature would have figured out a less roundabout way to prohibit the use of non-sterile ink?
So I would question the premise that this is a roundabout way to do it.
Well, they could have just said you can't use non-sterile ink. I mean, that would have been the most direct way to say it.
Well, they may have. So you're right. And the only reason we're here, there is a dispute, is because this regulation doesn't specifically say in those terms that a tattoo artist has to use non-sterile ink. But if you look at the plain language of sterile instruments and aseptic technique at all times during a procedure. I want to start by focusing on that last language, at all times during a procedure. That implies that the it has to be sterile instruments not just at the beginning of the procedure, but at the end of the procedure, and that it could change. The sterility of the instruments, the aseptic nature of the techniques could change during the course of the procedure. And it doesn't
puncture the skin, the needle isn't sterile, right?
Once you stick the needle into the skin,
right.
Well, you know, that brings up another good point, which is how do we figure out what sterility means? Sterile instruments isn't defined by the statute. Aseptic techniques is defined. And I think the common meaning of both of these phrases and the special definition of aseptic techniques exclude the possibility of removing, you know, making an instrument unsterile by sticking it in the skin. And aseptic techniques is just defined as a procedure that prevents contamination of any object or person. So sticking the needle into the person for its intended use doesn't render that needle unsterile or doesn't provide that it is an aseptic technique. But when you stick it into a non-sterile substance and then stick it into the skin, Dr. Dinges, now there's a question. Part of his expert testimony that was stricken in this case is what does aseptic technique mean? What does a sterile instrument mean? He says that, you know, it isn't the Department of Tattooing that adopted this regulation, it's the Department of Health, and that these are terms of art that all doctors and all medical practitioners in the Department of Health understands, and these terms of art mean that a needle isn't rendered unsterile just because you hold it in the air or because you stick it in the skin, but it is rendered unsterile when you dip it into a non-sterile substance. Same goes for aseptic technique. We think it's a well-settled canon of statutory construction that when a regulation or a statute uses a term of art, you look at the art that defines that term, and that's why Dr. Dinge's declaration shouldn't have been stricken. Aside from the fact that there's no, so it's hard for me to look at this language and accept the premise that it's kind of prohibiting non-sterile ink in a roundabout way. But if you look at it and you say, well, because non-sterile ink isn't specifically referenced, maybe it's ambiguous. Well, then you have permission to resort to the purpose of this law. And the purpose of the negligence per se statute, carving out in subsection 3 liability on as a matter of law for using non-sterile instruments or non-aseptic technique, and then as well as the regulations that govern tattoo artists and the statutes that govern.
I guess, you know, I looked, there's three places that I saw in the statute and in the regulation where they clearly could have said ink, and they chose not to, and that troubles me. But I suppose a further question is, what is the availability of non-sterile ink? I mean, is non-sterile ink actually available? If it's not, it sort of makes sense to me then why it's not included in the statute or the regulations.
Yeah.
Your position is that it is available, and I'm asking what evidence would support that?
CP 353 and 359 show website printouts that sterile ink is commonly available, and those website printouts were made by a computer expert who made sure that those websites were available to be ordered from at the time of the negligence per se and the negligence
and
in this case.
They advertised it as sterile.
Correct.
Is there anything more than that, or would they just put the label sterile on it? And
I believe that they indicate they're irradiated with gamma radiation, and as Dr. Dinges elaborates on in his declaration, that is a way of ensuring that ink is in fact sterile, and that was available at the time.
So she's allowed to rely on that representation, but not allowed to rely on the bottle itself if it lacks the term sterile?
Or does it
have to be sterile in fact?
There's no question of reliance. I mean, any more than there's a question of Ms. Chester being able to rely on the tattoo artist using, it would be like saying that.
Well, you argue she should or should have known that this was a contaminated sample.
I argue that she should or should have known that it wasn't sterile, and that at the point she, not that Art Burden isn't to prove that she knew it was contaminated.
So if it had been a bottle marked sterile and sold as sterile, you just walk away from the claim because she's entitled to rely on that.
She is. Well, then it would be a question of whether in the exercise of ordinary care she would have a defense to negligence per se, because it would have either been impossible or she would have justification for committing negligence per se. It would be in the realm of an affirmative defense the defendant has to prove, not something that we would have to disprove. My time has expired, so I'll reserve the rest for my rebuttal.
Thank you.
Good morning. Before I begin, I have a quick question as far as my co-defendant's counsel, Karen Bamberger, and whether we need to be splitting our time. We represent different defendants.
There's 10 minutes total. You can divide it any way you want. It's up to you to tag team and make the change when you want to make the change.
Excellent. So 7 minutes. Excellent. Okay. So my name is Stacia Hoffman, and I am here for Defendant Deep Roots, the tattoo shop where Bonnie Gilson tattooed Anna Chester, the appellant. The only reason that we are even talking about the provision 246.145.0501, which is the aseptic technique regulation, is because there has been a complete ignorance of statutory interpretation, and that a regulation is to be given its full consideration in the context in which it is written. There is no requirement in WAC 246.145.050 of the use of sterile ink. And what's important about that is there is actually a subsection within that very section that discusses ink, and there's no mention of sterility in that section. So by focusing on 246.145 section 1 only, we are ignoring the
statute licenses the practice of tattooing using non-toxic inks and pigments. If one were to regard the ink used in this case as a toxic ink, it is outside the license practice, and it's a per se violation of the statute, is it not?
That statute is RCW 70.54.330, and that is a definition statute. It defines what is tattooing, and what is important about that statute, it uses non-toxic and not sterile, but it doesn't provide a duty of care. And
it says shall not tattoo without a license, doesn't it?
But it doesn't
say... That
creates
a duty to the patient under the statute.
Well, let me turn your attention to that statute is actually not the statute to be used for RCW 5.40.050. That statute is 18.300.010, and it also has a definition of tattooing, and it says this is a definition of tattooing that applies to our state's negligence per se statute, and it doesn't use the word of non-toxic. And what that really illustrates is that when a statute is giving a definition and not prescribing a standard of care, I'm not saying that 18.300.010 has a standard of care either. They're both just definition statutes. Turning to during a procedure and WAC 246-145-050, it is true that things can change, but we know from the next section, which is 060, that talks about sterilizing instruments, and it goes through a long list of how a tattoo artist is to go about sterilizing instruments. Noticeably absent from that is any indication of sterilizing ink. Now, sure, things can change during a tattoo procedure. Maybe it's an 8-hour tattoo and the tattoo artist has to run to the restroom. So what the aseptic procedures is talking about there is coming back and making sure that your hands are washed, that you're gloved. It doesn't change and it doesn't require a use of non-sterile ink in the absence of any regulation that an aseptic procedure is sterile ink. And Dr. Dingus, his opinion was properly excluded as a legal conclusion. He tells us that he is interpreting the statute. When a witness says that a statute seems unambiguous to me and that the only meaning that he can attach to a rule, that is the essence of a legal conclusion that is left for the court. As far as a kind of bootstrap argument that he's not really... interpreting the statute, he's just explaining to all of us what is the standard of care. Well, he hasn't laid a foundation that he is qualified to talk about the tattoo industry. There's been talk about, well, there's borrowing aseptic procedure from the CDC, and that's a medical and that's the medical field, and Dr. Dingus is a medical doctor. Therefore, his knowledge automatically transfers to the tattoo industry. But the problem with that is the Secretary of Health specifically defined universal precautions in 246-145-010, subsection 26, and the concern there was bloodborne pathogens. And that is actually the purpose for this most recent round of changes.
So your position is that even if sterile inks were available, that she was not required to use it by the statute and regulations?
Absolutely. And by the there's no requirement in the statutes. There's no industry standard that sterile ink is what was used for the ordinary care of a tattoo artist. And so Dr. Dingus being a medical doctor isn't enough. In the absence of the Secretary of Health borrowed something from the medical field about tattoo ink, it otherwise just doesn't transfer. So as far as Judge Spearman's question earlier about the availability of sterile ink, there has not been a showing that sterile ink was even available other than one brand in TENS. So if the legislature required the use of sterile ink, they might as well have just said, you must use in TENS ink. And I think that would probably cause...
Even if it wasn't a statutory, I mean, it wasn't negligence per se. It's just if it on just the duty of ordinary care. Would she then have a Ms. Chester then have a claim for the failure to use non-sterile ink if it's available?
If there was an industry standard, if there was an expert who was who was familiar with the tattoo industry, the procedures, the availability of sterile ink, the success of gamma irradiation, the prevalence of it, how it is stored, in fact, in the article that Dr.
Is there a dispute, a factual dispute about whether this sterile ink is available or not?
There's not a factual dispute that Intense ink was available. and the intense ink advertised is non-sterile. The problem is that there's no evidence that the ink was in fact sterile. Just because someone advertises as being sterile, that doesn't necessarily mean that it is. That's, of course, hearsay. So in the absence of any evidence that the legislature or the Secretary of Health required sterile ink, or that the standard of care, the ordinary duty of care to use sterile ink, there simply is no requirement for the use of sterile ink. And I will now turn it over to Ms. Bamberger. Thank you. We ask the court will affirm.
Thank you, Your Honors. Karen Bamberger here on behalf of Bonnie Gilson. I just want to touch on a few points. There is no evidence that sterile ink was available at the time, other than this reference to the Intense ink. And again, as Ms. Hoffman stated, there is no evidence. Dr. Dinges is not a tattoo artist, and when they talk about the standards in the industry, they mean the industry of tattooing. If they had submitted a declaration from the head of, Tattoos R Us or whatever the organization is, and said, look it, every single tattoo artist orders ink that is sterile, or they take this extra precaution and they send it out to get gamma radiated. But there's no evidence of that. And in fact, the evidence in the record is that Ms. Gilson did know the rules, that she had used Intense ink, didn't really like it so much, that she had used one ink without any issue. So what if she's, why wouldn't she continue to use it? And Judge Spearman, you're right. Ink is mentioned in the wax, and the legislature is presumed to know how to write a statute, and it's presumed to know how to write a regulation. And it very clearly identifies, for example, when it's talking about how you sterilize jewelry, that you have to sterilize jewelry. Doesn't say anything about the use of sterile ink. I think that Dr. Dinges is frustrated because of what he perceives to be a lack of regulation within the tattoo industry. And if that's so, that's for the legislature to deal with, not for this court. He talks about, well, when I stick my sterile hypodermic needle into my sterilized vial of medication, okay, but that's not how tattoo ink is sold. It couldn't be sold that way. So that's another reason why his experience and knowledge within the medical field just doesn't translate. And as Ms. Hoffman alluded to earlier, the purpose here, when you look at the enabling statute as well, RCW 7054320, the legislature's biggest concern was not that ink was going to come contaminated, because I think the legislature thought that's the FDA's problem. And in fact, I think that's why the legislature in the regulations talks about the fact that you can't use ink that has been banned or restricted by the FDA. They think the FDA is handling the manufacture of the ink. What the legislature is doing is, okay, once it gets into that tattoo artist's hands, once the tattoo process begins, that tattoo artist has to use aseptic technique. And if you look within WAC 246-145050 sub 9, that explains what aseptic technique is, how you have to use gloves, et cetera, et cetera. Thank you.
So the reference in the regulation to ink that's banned or restricted by the FDA, it's in WAC 246-145050, subsection 18. It says ink must not be banned or restricted by the FDA. Well, we all agree, and it's in both parties' briefing, that tattoo ink is regulated as a cosmetic under the Federal Food, Drug, and Cosmetic Act. That act, in 21 U.S.C. section 331, prohibits the introduction, delivery, use, or reception or receipt of adulterated cosmetics. 21 U.S.C. section 361 provides that a cosmetic is adulterated if it contains any substance deleterious to human health. So while the FDA regulations do not explicitly require sterile ink, they do expressly prohibit the use of contaminated ink. And so even under that regulation, and I the parties have cited the Food, Drug, and Cosmetic Act, but not those precise provisions, and so we intend, I've only recently appeared in this case, and we intend to submit a supplemental authorities either this afternoon or tomorrow morning at the at the latest. But those provisions of the Food, Drug, and Cosmetic Act should be game, set, and match on the question of whether or not there is a statute or a regulation that prohibits the use of contaminated ink, even if it doesn't require sterile ink, as we implicitly contend.
Is there a knowledge element to the use of contaminated substances?
Not that I'm aware of. In looking at those statutes and in the case law decided under them, I haven't seen any knowledge requirement. It just is a flat-out prohibition on cosmetics containing substances that are deleterious to human health.
That and might be of interest in the supplemental authority.
Thank you, Your Honor. We'll do that. The second point, though, that I want to make is here, the knowledge that's required to prove a negligence claim isn't knowledge on the part of this tattoo artist that the ink was contaminated. It's knowledge that the ink wasn't sterile, actual or constructive knowledge. That's new or should have known that the ink wasn't sterile. Actual or constructive knowledge, knew or should have known that sterile ink was available. And if you look at CP 353, 359, and 385, it's pretty clear that it was available. There are multiple brands available.
Well, you say available, but all I've heard so far is there's ink that's labeled sterile. Whether it's actually sterile or not, we don't.
CP 385 provides the test results confirming the sterility of the Intense ink. And then the study referenced by the European study referenced by Dr. Dinges actually refers to several brands. And, of course, there's no guarantee, but if you buy sterile ink, maybe that gives a potential defense under the negligence per se jury instruction that wouldn't be present in a case where you knowingly don't buy sterile ink or knowingly don't use sterile ink. And so that's what we should be required to prove, not that they knew it was contaminated. That would be an intentional battery.
Thank you all very much. Very interesting cases. That concludes our session.